It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Save big money on everything you need at Menards. Your roof is the first line of defense against the elements, and it enhances the appearance of your home's exterior. Owens Corning Duration Shingles offer ultimate protection. Choose from 26 stylish colors and transform your home today. Shop our selection of roofing products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Some people say that the information is compartmentalized in a way that even the president is kept in the dark. And the report mentioned that 40% of the phenomena that were observed cannot be explained in terms of human-made technologies, either from the U.S. or what we know about it. And in the same week, I'm being asked to lead the UAP Science Advisory Council for the government to come out and admit that they're not doing their job. That's quite unusual, but also for them to ask scientists to be involved. That is very significant, I think.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. Today, I'm once again joined by Professor Avi Loeb, and this time, it's a timely one because just this week, we've learned more about the new UEP governance structure being put together in the United States, which includes, among others, a science advisory council that Avi has been asked to establish. There's a lot to unpack here. What is this board actually going to do? Who is involved? What sort of data will they be looking at? And crucially, if the work is limited to unclassified material, can it really move the conversation in any kind of meaningful way? We're going to get into the role of skeptics within the council, the inclusion of Michael Shermer, the relationship between his work and the Galileo Project, and whether new findings could still end up classified, and where Avi draws the line between open-minded science and healthy skepticism. I do also talk to him about Dr. Beatrice Villarreal's work on pre-Sputnik transients, because that's been a real talking point, and a lot of you wanted me to ask him about that, especially around how scientists should approach unusual data points without either dismissing it too quickly or jumping too far ahead. So as a conversation about science, transparency, government involvement, and whether this new advisory structure has the potential to make real progress, or whether it risks becoming just another layer of process in a field that we have seen plenty of that already. As always, listen carefully, make up your own mind, and let me know what you think. Please make sure you like, share, subscribe, do all that. Liking the video makes a massive difference, and sharing it, leaving reviews on the audio would be appreciated. Here is my conversation with Professor Avi Loeb. And welcome back to the podcast, Avi Loeb. Avi, how are we?
Thanks for having me. It has been a very exciting week, actually.
Yeah, for all of us, but for you particularly. Out of nowhere, Avi, we got news 3 or 4 days ago now that there was going to be... It was a little confusing for folks at first because we thought there was a new UEP science group, and then we heard it was going to be a part of a larger board that the US government was setting up. You were heading up the science wing of that. So can you take us there first off and let us know exactly from the horse's mouth What's happening? What's the group and what's your role?
Yeah, so the last week had the three interesting events. First, on June 12th, Steven Spielberg released his movie to the public, Disclosure Day, and I went to see it. But a few hours earlier, I actually analyzed the real disclosure, the third batch that the U.S. government released. And in it, there was a report from the director of the Oil Domain Anomaly Resolution Office in the Pentagon, Dr. John Kozlowski, where he mentions an event that lasted 2 days in October 2023, where law enforcement officials saw unusual objects in the sky, orbs that give birth to smaller orbs. And the report mentioned that 40% of the phenomena that were observed cannot be explained in terms of human-made technologies, either from the U.S. or what we know about adversarial nations. So that is a remarkable document, because you would expect if they thought that some of these or all of these objects are human-made, potentially they should have belonged to adversarial nations, then this would have been a classified memo that Kozlowski sends to the Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth. Why should it go to the public? The fact that it goes to the public implies that there is something strange going on. Okay, so these objects cannot be easily interpreted as human-made. And in the same week, I'm being asked to lead a UAP Science Advisory Council that will communicate with a governing board, a UAP governing board that represents the White House, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, the AARO, the Oil Domain Anomaly Resolution Office in the Pentagon, the FBI, and the intelligence community. So there would be representatives from all of these organizations. They already met once, and we serve them in the sense of providing scientific advice. Now, for the government to come out and admit that they're not doing their job, that's the report from Kozlowski, that's quite unusual. But also for them to ask scientists to be involved, that is very significant, I think. And I feel that it's my duty as a scientist to do the best I can to provide the advice and guidance to the Pentagon as to how to resolve the nature of UAP. And here is the interesting point, that if you don't care about national security, you might say, why should we, in fact, cooperate with the government, and we should just examine this subject scientifically and try to collect our own data. That's what I'm doing with the Galileo project. But the advantage of working with the government is that, you know, if the down-to-earth interpretation of the unusual objects would be to say they're human-made, and then it means that there is a breach of national security. So that motivates further inquiry. That motivates investing funds in research and analysis of the data, such that we can figure out the nature of these objects, because apparently adversarial nations are spying on strategic assets within the U.S., which I would say is not a huge surprise by itself, because there was the Chinese spy balloon discovered in 2023 and shut down. And for every ant that you find in the kitchen, there should be thousands of ants hiding in the cabinet. So if you find one, and there should be a lot of balloons that flew over the U.S. that were not recognized, and there could be a lot of drones, and these orbs could be drones. Now, if that is the case, which is the most down-to-earth explanation, which you know, any intelligence agency should worry about, that means one has to put more research and effort in finding out the nature of these objects. And obviously, in the process of collecting data, eventually it will become clear what they are, and there wouldn't be any uncertainty. And that's exactly the transition from the time when Galileo Galilei looked through his telescope, realized the Earth is not at the center because the moons of Jupiter are moving around Jupiter. That was the first time someone reported that, but then the Vatican resisted. However, 350 years after Galileo died, the Vatican admitted in 1992 that Galileo was correct. Why did they do that? Because there was so much data, you know, from spacecraft looking at the Earth, moving around the sun, that it was foolish to argue otherwise. So the Vatican admitted that they were wrong. So we want to get to that point where everyone would agree that we are being, you know, if indeed we are visited by some alien technology, there would be conclusive evidence beyond any doubt. And how do you get to that point? By collecting more data so that it would be foolish to argue otherwise. So that is the path forward. It's not by arguing on social media and saying we already believe in that. That's not convincing, okay, to most people. The way to convince everyone is by having absolutely no doubt in conclusive data. Now, it's possible the U.S. government has some, and it's not being it's compartmentalized, and it's not being shared even with the president. You know that these are possibilities, but we need to get to a point where the data, the evidence, will be clear beyond any doubt. And even if it was compartmentalized, that doesn't preclude us from getting more data of higher quality, so that we will flood the community with so much information and data that it would be irrelevant what was hidden from view before. You know, last night I had a Q&A on YouTube for 2 hours, people asking me, and the last question had to do with, what should we do if we realize the government lied to us and we are being visited by aliens? And I said, look, if we find that we're being visited by aliens, the last thing we should do is, you know, focus on who to punish, which bureaucrat didn't do their job, and put them in at the town center and hang them or do something. Like, this is the most, wasteful action that is completely irrelevant, because once we discover we have to think about the future. There are so many things. It will impact the future of humanity in such a fundamental way. Why would we focus on toxicity, hating other people, you know, punishing them for not doing? That's completely irrelevant. All of this is completely dwarfed by the discovery, and it will bring us to a completely new future. So the way I phrase it is very simply, let's keep our eyes on the orbs, not on the audience. And it's a paraphrase of what basketball players say. Let's keep our eyes on the ball, not on the... So the issue is not what did some people do under some circumstances that prevented us from seeing it before and so forth. That's completely irrelevant. If we realize this fact, then the next question is how to adapt to it. What is the action plan? Are these visitors hostile or friendly? Should we protect the Earth against them? Should we figure out what technologies they are using, what will be the impact on financial markets, on society at large? There are so many questions. And the first thing is, of course, to demonstrate beyond any doubt the evidence. And that's the goal of the council, to figure out if there is such evidence. And if not, if it turns out that all these objects happen to be human-made, then at the very least, we served the U.S. government in the sense of allowing it to defend strategic assets much better, because apparently, you know, these are coming from adversarial nations.
So let me just preface. I know some people will be upset when they hear you say it doesn't matter about individuals and bureaucrats who may have covered this up. I personally...
No, let me correct that. I don't mean to say that it doesn't matter. I mean to say there is something far more important.
There's something bigger. Yeah.
Something much bigger that we should focus on.
Yeah. No, that's fair. And I agree with that sentiment. I think, and I've argued this before, Avi, that there will be people who have perhaps done things, very, very terrible things, in the name of keeping this secret for 80 plus years. However, the general public and perhaps scientists like yourself are going to care far less about a witch hunt and bringing them to justice when a bigger truth is revealed, that we have a non-human intelligence.
Well,
of alien life.
Let me ask you the following. When the Vatican in 1992 announced that Galileo was right and they were wrong, did anyone prosecute them? Did anyone say we should put you in jail because you argued incorrectly that the Earth is at the center of the universe? Did anyone do that? And they tried to hide the information. They put Galileo in house arrest, which is equivalent to suppressing knowledge from the public that of what he found through his telescope. They didn't want him to express that. The same was true about Copernicus. They banned his book until the 19th century. The church banned a book, and yet nobody was upset and furious to put those people, to punish them for doing that. So this already happened in history. Why should this case be any different? Once you have a clear evidence for something that changes the view of where we are in the universe, that gives us a new perspective on our place, on our cosmic neighborhood, you know, we need to focus on that rather than on the people that try to fool us before then. Because otherwise we will waste all our time, you know, worrying about what to do with the church that, they lied to us. They were hiding information. They suppressed the voices of dissent. And, if we engage with that, we will not engage with the substance, which is, let's figure out what it means for our future.
What I would love to know, Avi, is who do you report to, one individual, or are you reporting to a bigger group of people and organizations?
As the head of the UAP Science Advisory Council, I will be reporting our findings, our requests to the UAP governing board that will include representatives from the White House, the intelligence agencies, and the FBI and the Pentagon. And of course, there will be a dialogue with that organization. It will have, of course, access to classified information, whereas our council will review only unclassified documents.
And who decides what documentation you get to see? Is that handed down to you, or do you Yes. have a say in what you want to see?
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
The council will not have, could request and ask for some material, some information, but the UAP governing board will decide what to transfer. And I think the main consideration that could suppress the flow of information would be national security. But other than that, there is a mindset of sharing data based on President Trump's directive to declassify information that is not essential for national security.
So outside of national security reasons, which I'm sure everyone understands, not everyone's always happy with, but I think it's a common sense argument. Are there any limitations to what data you can receive? Again, that would be declassified.
Not as far as I know. What is surprising is the recognition that there are some events and data that clearly indicate something beyond human-made technologies, because otherwise we would not see this report coming from Dr. John Koslowski.
Have you had any wind early on? I imagine, I know this is the very early days of the board and your particular group. Have you got any wind of any documentation, events, or evidence that we haven't seen publicly that raises your eyebrows or makes you think this is very much something worth pursuing?
Well, there are a number of people who are suggesting such things, including materials from crash sites. I haven't seen any direct evidence for their existence. The claim is they might be within the jurisdiction of corporations. Some people say that the information is compartmentalized in a way that does not, that even the president is kept in the dark. And if the president is kept in the dark, obviously I'm in the dark about them. And the question is, do they exist? And of course, one can request those documents and hope for the best. The U.S. Congress can also request those corporations to share what they have. And that has happened with Representative Burleson recently. He asked MITRE and another corporation to release their, Lockheed Martin is another one that is often talked about as potentially having some materials there. But I don't have firsthand information that such materials exist, not to speak about the biologics, which is another subject. Of course, Steven Spielberg in his movie suggested that he believes the U.S. government is in possession of alien bodies. That was shown at the end of the movie. But he was using his artistic freedom to display that. It's not clear whether it exists.
Do you believe the U.S. government may be in possession of biologics or material of non-human origin?
Well, I wrote an essay last week in which I mentioned that we developed artificial intelligence based on silicon chips. These chips are being made out of sand. We take sand, we purify it, we use the silicon and make those wafers that are used in the chips. And we think that's the pinnacle of our technological advance to make those AI systems that can potentially be scaled up to be more capable than the human brain. But the fact of the matter is that right now we are using gigawatts of power to perform the cognitive skill that the human brain displays with just 20 watts. And the human brain is, of course, relying on biology, on chemical reactions rather than silicon chips. Very different method. So I can imagine that in the more distant future, we will go through a much bigger revolution in our abilities. Once we learn how to use synthetic biology, how to design a brain that functions just like our biological brain, but we can scale it up, just like you can scale up an AI system made of silicon chips. You might be able to scale up a biological brain that is constructed based on synthetic biology. And that would be a much bigger advance because I was asked actually by a student in France, that's what triggered my essay, how come we haven't seen self-replicating intelligent probes? Doesn't that mean that von Neumann's idea of having even one advanced civilization within the Milky Way galaxy that is capable of producing self-replicating probes would have filled, colonized the entire Milky Way galaxy within 100,000 years if these probes propagated at 1% of the speed of light, just because they double every time they reach a new destination? And so that takes just 100,000 years, which is a small fraction of the age of the Milky Way, to populate all the exoplanets with self-replicating probes. And the fact that we haven't seen any does it mean that there is no civilization more advanced than ours that can do that? And I replied that, in fact, I interact with self-replicating intelligent probes every day. They are called humans. And perhaps by the time we reach a level of developing or using synthetic biology to design brains that are more capable than the human brain, then at that point we'll use them to send out these synthetic biology astronauts to interstellar travel, because we can design them to live very long. And if another civilization accomplished that, perhaps we were put on this Earth as the self-replicating probes that von Neumann was talking about. Maybe it's us, and we just don't know. I mean, why are we so different from animals? Maybe it was a result of a visit. So at any event, my point is that in such a scenario where you imagine synthetic biology and not just robots with AI made of silicon chips as the technological visitors to a planet, it's quite possible that we will see designed visitors that are biological, but they were not a result of sort of a random process from a soup of chemicals on a planet. They were designed to fulfill some tasks. And therefore, we should be open-minded to the possibility that we will find in crash sites such things, not just robots with AI, you know, the way that old science fiction movies were about. I'm open to that possibility for the reasons that I just mentioned, because I think that would be our bigger advance relative to AI. And we might use those systems for interstellar travel if we send astronauts to space, because they would be designed to survive for long journeys. We can use synthetic biology to design their bodies to be much more resilient to the harsh conditions of space. And therefore, we could expect visitors of that nature as well. And the only way to find out if such visitors arrived, you know, and they didn't need to arrive just now, by the way. Probably they were around for a long while. I mean, we tend to think that if we will spot something, it's just very recent, but probably they have been around for a long time. It's just that we started noticing unusual things once we developed the technological skills to do that. So I'm open-minded to that, as well as to just hardware, you know, like technological hardware. Either way, we should not have any prejudice as to what we might find. We should be open-minded and look for unusual objects. That's all.
One of the reactions online was to the people were disappointed you weren't getting access to classified information. I'm sure you would have loved access to classified information if you could have got a hold of it.
Well, okay, so there are two ways to look at it. It's actually a blessing to be given just unclassified data for two reasons. One, you're not signing any NDA about not releasing it, so you can share it with the public. And it's very good for scientific deliberations that are open, where you can use whatever you're given and display how you arrived at your conclusions to anyone. So that's the way science operates. It's things are never classified. The only reason some scientists keep their data close to their chest is in order to have some advantage relative to other scientists that will not be able to use the same data. So if they collect some data, they want to keep it to themselves for a while. But if we get unclassified data, that's ideal in the sense of being able to analyze it openly, share it with the public so everyone would know about it. And we can ask for clarifications. If there are some redacted parts of the data, we can ask for more information. We can ask for the context by which the data was taken, for the assessment from the intelligence agencies as to what really happened in that arena. You know, right now, all the batches that were disclosed did not include such information, but we can ask for it. And if we're given it, you know, if the government releases a video, there is no reason for them not to tell us the circumstances. That was not a part of the release so far, but the council can ask for that. So we hope to gain a more understanding of the context about also the kind of instruments that were used and do some analysis that they would serve the public. These are the benefits, that it's open, that there is no suspicion that we are holding back something, because there is no reason for the council to hold back, because everything is unclassified. So we are not we are not doing anything illegal by opening up the conversation. Okay, that's a great benefit, because it's all transparent, straightforward. The disadvantage is, of course, that some of the data will not be shared with us. As long as the data, as we were discussing, as long as that data that is not shared with us, is simply not shared because it was collected by classified sensors or because it exposes some vulnerabilities of the U.S. defense system, you know, that's completely understandable. But that would not apply to all data. For example, if you deal with 50 years ago, whatever was relevant back then is not relevant today. So I very much hope that we can push government to share with us everything that is not relevant right now for national security. And I think that would be a relatively big data set. And the other thing is, if some parts of government are not aware of other parts that somehow we learn about and we can ask for that information that may expedite the process of declassification and disclosure. So that's where we are. I mean, it's not as if we are given an opportunity to change the system. It's not that like they're asking us whether we want to see classified data. They're just presenting the situation as is. But I will, of course, represent the council in front of the UAP governing board, and perhaps I will have the opportunity to comment on what we might want to see and help declassify some information that previously was not transparent.
I'd like to give you a scenario, but I want to give you a little bit of context first, okay? So bear with me. We have heard from multiple whistleblowers in the very recent past who have come out and told us they have been in briefings and skiffs and they have shared information that was no threat to national security. It wasn't classified. Some of it, their own life stories. And once it was relayed to the officials across the table from them, they were told that information was now classified, including things that happened to them in their childhood that were not related to UFOs, UAP, the military, nothing. They just basically told their story. So this is why there's a big distrust of whistleblowers sharing information with Arrow, for example. This is from Dylan Borland.
Well, on that issue, there is an initiative right now, and Representative Luna mentioned it, Representative Burleson in particular, was asked by Stephen Miller in the White House to craft together a protection for whistleblowers, that a legal protection that would allow them to come forward. So I think both lawmakers and the White House are working on that. And what I wanted to convey is that there is a sense of cooperation here. That's what we should celebrate. I saw a lot of negativity on social media, but I would advise everyone to celebrate the moment, because we have an opportunity to make the future better than the past. Our council does not need to be, in the mold of previous committees that didn't produce much transparency. So let's instead of complaining and being negative and saying, there were some people who said, my council does not exist, it's all fake. And then they said they will never do anything. So why get into this toxic content? Why be negative? Let's celebrate the moment and try to do the best we can, because after all, we are all curious as to whether there are objects visiting us that are non-human made. And the way to proceed is actually cooperate with the government, because right now the mindset within government is very different than it used to be. Right now they are asking scientists like myself to get involved. What could be better than that? Why should we be negative about it? Why should we say, this committee should not have existed, or doesn't, it's a fake? These comments are being made by people who care about UAP, and yet they are negative about such an initiative. I don't understand that. Let's all come together and seize the moment in the sense of trying to make the best progress we can. And that's definitely my commitment. I am an optimist. And I think that eventually the truth will come out, either from existing data, or if we need, we will get new data that will eventually expose the truth. So it's impossible to hide things forever, as we know from the experience of the Vatican. I keep coming back to that because it's an excellent analog. Eventually we'll get so much data that nobody would deny it. So let's just get to that point. And the way to do it is by, in part, allowing people to speak about what they know already. And so that protection for whistleblowers is extremely important. If the information that they bring forward is real and we can pursue it. I'm all for it. And the White House is actually working hand in hand with the lawmakers, in particular Representative Burleson and Luna and Burchett to make it happen in the near future. So I think we should all be happy about that.
Listen, despite my Scottishness, Avi, I am relatively positive now and again, right? But that context was to give you this scenario, and this is where you can reassure people who perhaps are And I think people are, it's fair to raise an eyebrow whenever anything new comes up in this topic, because we in the community, we folks who follow this topic have been burned over and over and over. But let me give you the scenario, okay? So bear in mind, I've just said about the context and the whistleblowers and things being classified that shouldn't be. Can you assure people that if your group puts in all the work that you plan on putting in and you make a discovery that does not breach national security, that you will be allowed to share that publicly and it won't be classified like life stories of whistleblowers?
You have my word for it.
And you don't have to sign NDAs that you've discovered alien life?
I haven't signed any NDA so far. Now, if I will have to sign NDAs because they would, someone within the government would like me to help them with classified information, that will apply only to the classified part, not to the unclassified part. But so far, none of that happened. The council will always be engaged with unclassified documents. If I will be asked to review classified documents, it will be in the context of the higher level governing board, but not in the context of the council. So whatever the council is doing, you can rest assured that this would be publicly available and obviously will promote disclosure and you know, understanding, figuring out the nature of UAP. And, you know, this is like a detective story. And the way to remove the mystery in a detective story is by collecting clues. You know, it's not by going around and asking people, what do you think? Which is currently the way, you know, people telling stories or expressing opinions on social media and, you know, arranging echo chambers where they believe in this or believe in that. That's not the way to make progress. The way to make progress is really by having evidence so that we can share it with everyone and everyone would agree. And at some point, even the Vatican would agree that there is no way out. You know, then the question will be how to adapt to that reality. You know, given if we change, if we have an ontological shock, if we realize that, you know, there is a neighbor that has been visiting us, the question is what to do about it and how to proceed, how to move forward. And, you know, the entire space age is a recognition that the Earth is not the center of the universe. So it will definitely bring humanity to a better place if we know what is in our cosmic neighborhood. And my sense is it will give us a sense of modesty because we will realize that we are not at the top of the food chain, cosmologically speaking.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You mentioned on an interview with Matt Ford from the Good Trouble show that I recommend people go and watch. That was on Wednesday evening. You'd hope to help the Pentagon and other departments improve sensor systems, various different instrumentations they may have, which would be right in your wheelhouse. Is it not fair to assume that many of these organizations and agencies probably have some incredibly sensitive equipment that would be classified and that therefore there's a big problem with information sharing, technology being classified, or a willingness to share?
Well, I think we should not overestimate how incompetent members of government could be. So even with the investment of $1 trillion a year in the defense budget, it's quite possible that, you know, data is being collected, but it's not analyzed properly. We're not taking the taking advantage of the latest AI algorithms to analyze the data. The threshold for detecting objects is not set correctly. You know, how else would you explain the Chinese spy balloon that was shot down? That was a giant object, okay? Mm. And it was surprising. And I'm willing to bet that for every giant Chinese spy balloon, there should have been many, many hundreds or thousands of smaller objects from China hovering over the US that were not recognized. So saying that, oh, the budget is huge, there are lots of brilliant people within the Pentagon, I mean, that's true, but they may not be using the correct approach to detecting these objects, and we get a wake-up call. How do we get the wake-up call? In the form of this Chinese spy balloon, that's an example, but also in the form of orbs that may end up being drones of a very unusual technology that we are not aware of. So the way to make progress is not by assuming that the government is fully competent and knows everything, but instead, you know, trying to figure out things that government cannot, because, you know, a government is not a scientific organization. Even within science, scientists miss very important clues every now and then. So I think we need the best minds to figure out what is going on. You know, and there are situations in history where scientists were really needed to help the U.S. government. That was true of the Manhattan Project, and that was true for many years in the national laboratories. And you cannot say that government is never engaged with making scientific discoveries, because there is an example from the late 1960s where the U.S. government decided to put a network of satellites called VILA, the VILA satellites, to look for gamma ray flashes, flashes of energetic photons that may come from nuclear explosions above the atmospheres from the Soviets, because there was a treaty banning such explosions above the atmosphere. So the U.S. wanted to verify that the Soviets are not violating the agreement. And so they put a network of satellites, and then these satellites started detecting gamma ray flashes every day, gamma ray bursts. And I'm sure in the first few days that Washington was quite alarmed by that finding. But eventually, after a few years, there was a paper published in 1972 by a team of researchers in Los Alamos National Laboratory, where they said there are gamma ray bursts coming from the universe. Okay, and guess what? After in 1997, we figured out what these might be. These come from the edge of the universe, and they are a result of the collapse of massive stars to a black hole. And in the process of the during the collapse, there are jets being produced, and they drill a hole in the envelope of the star. And if you happen to be along the axis of the jet, you would observe a gamma ray burst. So this is an example where the government detected an astronomical made an astronomical discovery of the birth of black holes in at the edge of the universe. Would you imagine that they would find that out of the wish to detect the violations of the ban on nuclear explosions? You know, that's amazing. And another example is the discovery of interstellar meteors, you know, the one of which I went after in the Pacific Ocean from 2014, and all in a catalog that was compiled from data collected by U.S. government satellites that are monitoring the Earth for ballistic missile launches. I mean, they were obviously the data was used in the war with Iran, but at the same time, they see fireballs from objects colliding with Earth. These are meteors, and they release those to the scientific community. And every now and then, there is an object moving faster than the escape speed from the solar system that we discover. And the most recent was on April 1st, 2026. We discovered it with my postdoc. The only reason I discovered it is because there was a meteor over Boston, and the same catalog reported about that. So I went to the catalog and saw the meteor over Boston on May 30th, 2026. And then down the list, a few places was the meteor from April 1st, 2026. And I saw, wow, this one is moving really fast, and it came along the pole of the Earth, the rotation pole of the Earth. So the rotation pole of the Earth is almost perpendicular to within 23 degrees from the orbital plane of the Earth around the Sun. So if something comes along the pole, you don't need to correct that velocity relative to as a result of the motion of the Earth around the sun. So I already knew just from the velocity along the pole that it's interstellar. And I told my postdoc, let's do a detailed calculation. We did that and we posted the paper about that. So we are discovering interstellar meteors thanks to the US government satellites. So I just gave you two examples of discoveries thanks to the US government national security concerns. And maybe the most significant among them would be the discovery of technological artifacts from other civilizations. That's possible because the US government monitors the sky all the time for national security purposes. And every now and then they might see an anomaly. So it's completely plausible that they have such data that would be the next big breakthrough in science.
Very quickly, what are your thoughts? Because you talked about the anomalies and what's being monitored there by the US government. Completely fair. We have now had three drops from war.gov/UFOs of varying quality, depending on how you look at it in terms of the videos, some interesting documentation, some less interesting. What's been your take on what has been released by these systems?
Well, it's preliminary. I think they have more substantial videos, images, and it just takes more time for the bureaucracy of government to declassify those. And of course, we can ask for things, specific things, that if we know about them and see whether the system responds to that, that's in fact something that the council that I'm leading can do. So that would be, if anyone knows of specific videos that we should request, then let me know. Okay. So I think the best is yet to come. And partly it will come through the natural birth canal of this disclosure procedure. But it can also be induced by us pushing through that system information that would take much longer to be released, or something that would not have been released unless we asked for it. And so I think we should definitely do our best if we know what to ask for. So far, the first three releases, I mean, were interesting in the sense that they demonstrated that there are objects that the government certainly does not identify. This is a subject that should be in the mainstream of the intelligence agencies because it may represent a national security threat. It should also be in the mainstream of science because many of the reports are reliable. I mean, obviously it's a mixed bag. And as you said, some of the things can be explained by mundane explanations, like these blue dots that were seen in Kodak films taken by the Apollo astronauts. I think some of them are definitely cosmic rays, but also there are some other reports that appear to be quite remarkable, that not easy to dismiss. There is no specific video, image, or document that convinces us beyond any reasonable doubt that we're dealing with non-human made technologies. Okay, such a thing was not released as of yet. That's what we are looking for. We just need one. We don't need many. You know, it's just like getting married. You just need one. And so let's find that one. I mean, all the others that are suggestive, you know, as much as people get excited, it's not enough. To change the conversation, we just need one very high quality database that cannot be denied simply because we had, let's say, multiple sensors looking at the same object. So it must be real. It cannot be just an optical illusion. We know the distance to the object, either from a radar system or from triangulation. So we can pinpoint the motion of the object and demonstrate that it's outside the performance envelope of human-made technology. That would be one way to figure it out. Another is a high-resolution image, if it exists, of, let's say, from satellites or some other source, if it exists, of that demonstrates an object with features that do not resemble any human-made technology. And finally, materials. That's the most direct way of realizing that something came from that is not human-made, because potentially we can use the isotope ratios within that material to demonstrate that the material is not from the solar system.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
I wonder, now you said earlier in this very interview, Avi, that perhaps some of the evidence we would be looking for has been around for a long time and we just haven't found it yet. It needs analysed properly.
Right.
You will be aware, you upset some people online when you suggested that the work of Dr. Beatrice Villarreal and her pre-Sputnik transients was potentially cosmic rays and bursts and prosaic more than...
I just mentioned cosmic rays as a potential source of noise. I didn't say that the work is incorrect. I just said, you know, there was... that team reported an anti-correlation between geomagnetic storms, you know, the plumes of plasma that come from the sun and hit the Earth. So they found an anti-correlation between them and the transients on the plates. And that's what you expect from cosmic rays, because cosmic rays, you know, are being pushed away from Earth by the magnetic fields in those plasma plumes. So whenever there is activity from the sun that hits the Earth, you have less cosmic rays arriving at Earth. That's a well-known, documented, studied phenomena. And they reported that the transient rate is anti-correlated with geomagnetic activity. So to me, that suggests that maybe at least some of the events that they recorded are cosmic rays, because this is the behavior. This is the signature of cosmic rays. So to me, that sounds completely reasonable to say, if you find this anti-correlation, you have to worry about the noise from cosmic rays. And if you ask how many cosmic rays should hit each photographic plate, I did a simple calculation. It's of the order of tens of thousands in the period of 1 hour that the plate was exposed to the sky. And, you know, so these hits happen. It's not up to debate. You can't, you know, if you hate cosmic rays, you don't want to discuss them, it will not make them go away. There are tens of thousands of hits on each photographic plate by cosmic rays. There is no doubt about it. Question is, what are the signatures of those? And could those be distinguished from real transients? And of course, that's what needs to be discussed. And it's not a personal attack. And in fact, I didn't even mention the names of the people involved, or Beatrice's name. We are in very good relationship. We are on Zoom calls together. And then people on social media try to incite an argument, a debate, a fight between us. But all I did was what is very often done in scientific discourse, which is to say, okay, you detected the signal. How do we know that the signal was not triggered by noise? Okay, so we know that cosmic rays exist. We know that satellites now exist. You have to worry about cosmic rays and satellites in any data you collect nowadays with telescopes, and any astronomer will tell you that I did not invent this wheel. Just speak with any observer and they will tell you that they see cosmic rays in any observation of the sky. Okay, they see that. This is a fact. So when Avi Loeb says this is a source of noise, you shouldn't be upset about it, because it's a source of noise. It's a fact. This is not my invention. I just pointed out that this is a source of noise, and the anti-correlation with geomagnetic activity is a signature of cosmic rays, so you have to worry about it. And so then everyone got upset that I even mentioned that. So it would have been better if I didn't say, I mean, would the cosmic rays go away if I didn't mention them? The only way to respond to that is to basically ask, how can we distinguish cosmic rays from real transients? And that's the way to proceed. And if one has a good argument, then it just strengthens the case, because cosmic rays do exist. They do contaminate the signals that we detect. We have to discuss them and move on. So, and if they are confusing the subject, then of course we need to recognize that. But if not, then the argument is even stronger when we can dismiss them as being the specific events that we talk about. Now, the other thing that was brought up in the third release was a CIA report from 1992 talking about the U-2 flights that in the late 1950s were confused. Half of the UFO reports, according to this CIA report, half of the UFO reports are associated with U-2 airplanes. And the government was not transparent on that, because they didn't want the public to be aware of U-2 airplanes. So you can imagine U2 airplanes producing a glint similar to what the satellites would produce. And by the way, some people are not aware, but in order to explain the transients in the photographic plates, you need to assume that these are very brief flashes of light that last less than a tenth of a second, you know, because otherwise the satellite would move across the sky and would create a streak. And instead, we see the transients as point sources. So that means that they were associated, if it's a satellite, that they were brief flashes of light, presumably due to having a solid surface, let's say a flat surface that was aligned just at the right angle to reflect sunlight for a very brief amount of time, a tenth of a second. So that's the assumption underlying the association of these transients in the photographic plates with satellites. The idea is that it's a glint lasting for less than a tenth of a second, because these plates were exposed for an hour and you would get a clear streak if it was not a very brief flare. So if you have a glint from a satellite, you might as well consider a glint from a U-2 airplane as another possible source of noise. And, you know, so these are not things to be upset by, because they do exist. And the only question is, can we distinguish? And we, you know, that's always the way that science is done. It's not by people saying, how dare you bring up this noise? I don't want to hear about it. And you should apologize for bringing this up. No, scientists do not apologize for considering noise. This is part of the scientific process.
Yeah, that explanation is incredibly fair. But what I wonder, to your point, and you're completely correct when you say all we need is one, is that sort of work, going back to something from the 50s, worth the advisory group you're heading up exploring to see, look, perhaps there are cosmic rays and various explanations, but can we find one thing here? Or is that still perhaps not quite what would whet the appetite of the advisory board?
No, that would be useful to ask the government if they have any documentation from the 1950s that is consistent with transient sources in the sky of the type that, yeah. And in fact, I'm very much in favor of asking them that. So any supplementary information that supports the idea that there were things in the sky before Sputnik that were not U-2 test flights, but something else, you know, that would be very helpful. And even before the 50s, why 50s? I mean, astronomy started a long time ago. It's just that the photographic plates were available for Vasco group to look into, but maybe the government has previous data. So yeah, definitely we should consider that. And but the problem with all the past reports, and you know, that's really a limitation, is that you cannot go back in time and get better data. We can't go to the pre-Sputnik era and then collect much better data, because whatever we have is what we can use. And the way to make progress is actually getting new data of higher quality with the better sensors we have now. So one thing I can tell you, that if there was a fleet of satellites of the type that is being considered in the 1950s, okay, if the same type of satellites were in existence today, they would have raised a big alarm within the intelligence agencies. Why? Because we will not be able to associate them with a particular country. And then immediately there would be the question of where do they come from? Are they spying on us? And nowadays we can take a lot of data that would reveal the nature of these satellites. Okay, so I'm sure, I mean, it sounds to me like common sense that if the intelligence agencies had information on hundreds or thousands of satellites, irrespective of what is the altitude, you know, irrespective, they would have seen them in deep images that we are collecting these days. And they would have immediately, and they would not need to rely on glints. They would just be able to see them even if there are no glints. And then they would immediately investigate who do they belong to, because I'm sure there is a list somewhere. At ODNI, at the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, of all the satellites that were employed ever by humans, all of them are known. And if there was a fleet of hundreds or thousands of satellites right now that are not recognized, there would be a lot of people studying them.
And Avi, I want to just finish up by asking you very quickly about the team that you have assembled here. I've been fortunate to speak to many of them on this podcast already. Matthew Shigadis, Gary Nolan, Tim Gallaudet's on there. One name you're probably going to get asked about quite a lot is Dr. Michael Shermer.
Yes. He
is a prominent skeptic. Now, folks, just to let you know, I've got Dr. Shermer on the podcast next week, so I'll speak to him directly about a lot of the questions folks have sent me over, and not through Avi, about someone else. But why was it important to you to include such a prominent skeptic and someone who has been quite outspoken and, quite frankly, was a little bit rude a few years back about a member of the UFO community?
Right. So I completely disagree with his assessments. In fact, I have a bet with him. But I think it's really important for any committee to have a dissenting opinion, someone who plays the devil's advocate. And the other point is that you could use him as a proxy about the progress that that the council is making. Because if he changes his tunes, if he concedes to my bet with him, you would know that it's very convincing. Okay, So that's my way. If I were to have only people who agree with me, or at least share my view that UAPs are real and they could represent non-human made technologies, then there is the risk of building an echo chamber where you convince yourself of something that is not real. But if I have one member who started on the other side of the argument, and at the end of the process, he's on my side, then you will know that we found something real. And that was my intention. Now, I regret that he made some comments that made people upset, and I hope he will not make them again. That would be another hope that, in the process of conversing with him, I will change the way he expresses himself on the subject. But all in all, first, it's very healthy to include people that do not agree with you on a committee. That is a rarity these days, because there is a lot of polarization on any matter, including politics or any. And then, in the US right now, there are people who do not invite relatives to Thanksgiving just because they disagree with them on political matters. That's unheard of. And all of this is fueled by social media and the hate, the toxicity that you find. The algorithm is encouraging you to engage only with your own tribe and people who agree with you and say exactly the same things. That's a bad practice. I don't surround myself just with people who agree with me. I want to hear the other side. And at the end of the process, if you see the other side conceding and siding with me, you will know that we made progress. So that's the way you should look at it. And I hope we will be there relatively short time frame. I hope the committee will make important advances. And by the way, it all depends on the information that is being shared with us. Obviously, we will make the best lemonade out of the lemons we are handed. And so the rate of progress will depend on the level of cooperation we get from government. But I have a lot of good connections within government. I've been leading a lot of institutes, committees, boards over the last decade and a half at the national level and also at the university level. And so I have a lot of experience managing groups of people and getting the best out of the system that I operate within. And one trademark that I have is my style of leadership, where I'm transparent and everyone know where I stand, and nobody thinks that I'm manipulating them. I'm talking about people who work with me, and they're not people that do not know me. People who do not know me will always say toxic things that just because they don't know me. But the people who work with me will tell you that I'm always transparent, straightforward, and they have their trust in me. And as a result of that, the work is far more efficient. That's why I served 3 terms as chair of the astronomy department at Harvard, the longest serving chair. It never happened before. 3 terms of 3 years, because my constituency had a lot of trust in me. And I didn't need to waste any time in telling them stories. We just worked together very effectively. And the same is true of many boards and committees. I chair the board on physics and astronomy of the National Academies in the United States. And I was on the President's Council of Science and Technology Advisors, PCAST, at the White House. So I have a lot of experience managing committees, managing organizations, and I hope to use it to improve the transparency on this subject of unidentified anomalous phenomena and get to the bottom of it. Whatever it means, if it's human-made, we help national security. That's the minimum. And then, of course, there is the possibility that we will get the icing on the cake, which is to realize that we are not alone.
And final brief question, will we get regular public updates on the work and advancements of the group?
Right. I will do my best to update the public through my posts, my essays on medium.com. I post almost every day. You can just subscribe for free. By the way, I don't make any money on these essays that I post on, you know, on the scientific work that I'm doing. I went on the expedition to the Pacific Ocean, but there was a proposal by a wealthy individual to fund it if we were to give that person part of the material, so that and I declined that. So I'm not doing things for profit, despite of what some people are saying on social media. Of course, the proof is that I'm not particularly wealthy, you know. I'm driven by a completely different mission, which is to understand the physical reality, the environment that we live in. That was from my childhood, my obsession of, you know, getting answers to very important existential questions. And the most important among them is, are we alone, or do we have siblings in our family of intelligent civilizations? It will have beyond the financial implications, the economic, you know, the political implications, the implications for exploration of space. It will have religious implications, philosophical implications about our place in the universe. You know, there is no reason that God must be a parent that can attend to only one child. We might have siblings, and, you know, we will have to adapt to the reality that some of them are more accomplished than we are. And it may inspire us to explore space and visit their backyard if they're visiting our backyard. Altogether, it's the biggest discovery ever made by humanity, if we make it. And given the significance of such a discovery, even if we assign a small probability to it being made, we should still explore it, because you multiply a small probability by a huge outcome. That's what the mainstream of the scientific community fails to recognize. And I hope to pull it with me into this study. And of course, the way to do that is to get the evidence. You know, it's all about the evidence, the data, not about opinions, convictions, beliefs. And that's what the Council for UAP Science will attempt to accomplish. And I hope we can speak again, not in the not too distant future, because there would be new revelations that require a completely new conversation.
I hope so, Avi, and I think everyone watching and listening to this will hope so. Wish you all the very best with the group, and I look forward to speaking to Dr. Shermer next week furthermore. So, yeah, best of luck.
Thank you, and I hope to justify your trust. I will do my best for that, and we are all curious about this fundamental question, and let's keep our eyes on the orbs.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.